Hi, Amherst Eclectic, and we are moving on to the story about river feedings in relation to the Johnny Depp Amber Heard case, only to point out that Johnny Depp has had some addiction problems for a number of years, 30 to be exact, or more, maybe. Again, pointing out the fact that he came from, you know, a family that moved around a lot, single mom, didn't have a lot of money. There's reasons people end up in addiction, and that might be part of it, right? So, I found an article in The Guardian, which I also had an article from The Guardian about the Heard Depp case and what's come out to support their both of their addictions, pretty much. But that in most cases, what Heard is saying is probably true. Maybe not everything is true, but, you know, with Johnny being a longtime addict who's had to go into recovery more than once, abuse, battery of a wife is not unheard of with addicts. And as much as people love Johnny, I love him too. I love his acting. I appreciate his work. His private life is probably different than what you think it is. And being an addict is not a fun thing. If you've ever been around addicts, lived with addicts, you'll know that. And many, many people have. And, it affects them and who they are behind closed doors, which is probably why he was let go from the Fantastic Beasts and other projects, because people know, okay, now it's out in the public. He's got a problem. And he needs to get it taken care of. And until he has totally taken care of it and is working a program and then shows honest, outright realization of his addiction, which, you know, most addicts have to come to that point, then, you know, they can't have him as project because he's going to be volatile. And, you know, also, you know, there's insurance on all these projects. And, you know, what if in the middle of that project, his addiction goes off the deep end? Like, it's already gone off several deep ends. But what if he dies on set? What if he gets way worse and can't finish the project? And, you know, we've watched actors and past performers do that. You know, Marilyn Monroe was, you know, always late, and in her later years, you know, she was hours late and cost productions lots of money because they're paying people to be there, because she had addictions as well. So what if they end up having to deal with that for this, you know, amazing actor that he is? Yes, but who knows how far he'll go and how quickly he'll go there. He's been going downhill, obviously, here lately. So, and, you know, now they're questioning Amber Heard as well because of the effects that this court case is having on her. And the fact that her, you know, addict ex-husband is trying so hard to repair his public persona that he's willing to tear her down to get there. And again, I don't want anybody to think that I don't like Johnny Depp or that I don't love him. I do. I love the work that he's done. But we also have to be honest about who he is in his private life. And, you know, other people, other women might have stepped forward and said that he's never been violent in the past. But that doesn't mean he hasn't been violent with other people. Maybe those people aren't coming forward. But there's always a first time. And if he is relapsed, he'll relapse even worse, which I've talked about that. When people relapse, they relapse and they're 25 times worse than they were when they got off the drug, because the relapse makes them go deeper and deeper. You know, they've been off of it for so long that they do more than they should. Okay, so we're relating this back to a story that I have told about how Johnny Depp and Keanu Reeves were there the night that River Phoenix passed out and died. And it was all over the news back then. Then when I look at articles and things that, you know, because here River Phoenix has OD'd from drugs, heroin, cocaine, which means whoever was hanging out with him was doing the same thing. So their reputations all were on the line. And let me tell you what, the studio probably stepped up and protected them. And then not long after, Johnny sold that bar. And he got rid of it. And probably because he was told, you don't get rid of that bar, you won't be working in Hollywood anymore. You better make this go away. You know, I'm sure they said something to Keanu Reeves. You better straighten up and fly right. You know, you're in the studio. We have pictures that are relying on you. And you're in the midst of filming this or that. So, you know, and the years have gone by and Keanu Reeves has talked about how close he was to River Phoenix. Well, in order to be close to River Phoenix, you had to be doing drugs too. You had to be a part of that world to be that close to River Phoenix. I mean, I don't guess you necessarily have to, but, you know, he also has the reputation of that being an addict. Keanu Reeves does. So, all right, this article was written, you know, back in 2018. It was an interview that was done with Samantha Mathis, who was in the movie with River Phoenix and ended up being in a relationship with River Phoenix. after that movie, this thing called, the thing called Love, or I can't remember what it was, but it was basically about people in Nashville trying to break into the music business. And I've watched that movie. And like I said in the other podcast, River Phoenix played a character that was supposed to be a drug addict, but man, he looked like he was definitely a drug addict, and obviously was, because that's what he died of. But he looked awful in that movie. I've never seen, I mean, it was scary. And, you know, I've never seen anybody that bad, because I've never been involved with someone who was into heroin and into the really hard stuff. I was afraid that my ex would go there, but, you know, I got out of that marriage before finding out that he would go there. But anyway, there's definitely a pattern and a personality and a background family of people who get into those sort of addictions to make the pain go away. So, River Phoenix, the untold story of the lost star River Phoenix, 25 years after his death. So that was 2018. Phenomenally talented and famously caring, River Phoenix's death shocked the world. His girlfriend, Samantha Mathis, talks for the first time about the awful night and the man behind the myth. And the reason I like reading these pretty much factual articles that, you know, they've done research, they've checked, you know, all of their sources. And, you know, of course, Samantha Mathis was River Phoenix's girlfriend. So, and she was there the night he died, from what I understand, with him, as well as Keanu Reeves and Johnny Depp, which I, you know, they don't mention that here, but it was mentioned back at the time. So, yeah. On the night of October 30th, 1993, River Phoenix's girlfriend, the actor Samantha Mathis, and his siblings Leif, now known as Joaquin, and Rain, walked into the Viper Room, the LA club owned by Johnny Depp. Mathis thought they were there only to drop off his little brother and sister, but when they arrived, he said to me, "Oh, there are some people playing music tonight in the club who want me to play with them. That's okay, right?" she says. Well, I mean, later we're going to find out it wasn't even about that. It was him wanting to do more drugs. Like, my ex used to always want to go out to eat, But it was always had to be a place that had alcohol. We couldn't go to a place that didn't have alcohol. And later I realized we never go to anywhere that doesn't have alcohol. And he's always getting a drink while I never drank. In fact, I have not really drank that much alcohol since the ending of our relationship. Because he was the one who always drank, and then I'd be, oh yeah, I'll have something too. You know, I don't need to have alcohol. In fact, if I never drink alcohol again, my world will never end. His will. My ex's will, because he's an addict. Okay. It wasn't okay with her, she thought. They would be going straight to her house. I knew something was wrong that night, something I didn't understand. She knew something was wrong because she knew her gut was telling her he was freaking high and that he was just trying to chase a bigger high. I didn't see anyone doing drugs, but he was high in a way that made me feel uncomfortable. I was in over my head, she says, but she knew he wanted to stay and thought it wouldn't be long after all. Some of his stuff was in the trunk of her car. Instead, she says, and she starts to cry during the interview, 45 minutes later, he was dead. Next week, in the 25th anniversary of that night, when the young actor who had always taken care to skew all the usual celebrity cliches died the most cliched death of all. On Sunset Boulevard, at the age of 23, Phoenix had always hated fame, but considered it its one potential benefit was that he could use it for good and change the world, talking urgently in every interview about vegetarianism and the environment. It is a template many have tried to copy, but none succeeded like Phoenix, because he believed in his ideals more intensely than most people believe in anything. This was the boy who once ran out of a restaurant in tears because his girlfriend, the actor and activist Martha Plimpton, ordered seafood. He was never entranced by the glitz of his own celebrity when he was nominated for an Oscar in 1989 for his performance in Running on Empty. A journalist on the Oscars red carpet said to him, "It's easy to get caught up in the Hollywood hoopla, isn't it?" Not for me. It isn't, he said, looking a little surprised by the question. But reacting against success can be as risky as embracing it, because it can allied into self-loathing and confusion. Quote, "I wish I could go someplace where nobody knows me," he sobbed in his breakout performance in Stand By Me. After he died, his mother, Arlen, known as Hart, told Esquire magazine that her son shared that sentiment. As River grew, he did become more and more uncomfortable being the poster boy for all good things. He often said he wished he could just be anonymous, but he never was. When he wasn't a movie star, he was a missionary. There's a beauty in that, the man with the cause, the leader, but there's also a deep loneliness. Unquote. Unlike most stars who die, young River Phoenix isn't just associated with early death, but also precarious talent. Every young actor from Leonardo DiCaprio to Timothy Chalamet who shows early promise gets compared to Phoenix. When River came in to audition, it was obvious that he was just an amazing talent. He could play instruments. He was so bright and brilliant. He could do anything, really, said Rob Reiner, who directed Phoenix in Stand By Me. Yet, as talented as he was, Reiner had to coax the 15-year-old to show his pain instead of bottling it inside. I said to him, "I want you to think about a time when someone, an adult who was important to you, let you down." He nodded and went away to think a few minutes. The next take, he was crying. And that's the one that went into the movie. He never told me what he thought about. I assume maybe one of his parents, but I don't know. And when I watch the movie now, when he disappears at the end, it's just very, very sad, said Reiner. Of the four children actors in the movie, only two, Will Wheaton and Jerry O'Connell, got to adulthood unscathed. Phoenix and Corey Feldman, who has said he was sexually abused by someone in the film industry, were less lucky. I asked Reiner if he thinks that reflects the fate of child actors in general, that there's a 50-50 chance they will turn out okay. He said, I don't know if it's reflective of child actors exactly, but more about whether child actors have enough of a familial foundation to withstand the difficulties. When I saw Leonardo DiCaprio in The Boy's Life and What's Eating Gilbert Grape, I thought, wow, this kid is insanely talented. If he doesn't have some kind of familiar moorings, he's going to fall off the deep end. So when we made The Wolf of Wall Street, I told him I'd been worried about him. He said, even though my parents divorced, I always had a good relationship with both of them. So he had that secure foundation, says Reiner. Phoenix also seemed to have a strong family connection during Stand By Me, so Reiner didn't worry about him. He had his mother there with him, all his siblings, and they were all there, Reiner says, then pauses, but I knew his father had problems with alcohol or something. I knew there were problems there. It is almost a mistake to confuse an actor with his roles, but it is impossible not to notice that. All of Phoenix's best performances involved him playing a character with a complicated family background. In My Own Private Idaho, probably his greatest performance, he played Mike, a street hustler looking for his mother, who says, if I had a normal family and a good upbringing, then I would have been a well-adjusted person. Didn't have a dog or a normal dad anyway. Yeah, that's all right. I don't feel sorry for myself. I mean, I feel like I'm, you know, well-adjusted. And that was the movie that River Phoenix was in with Keanu Reeves and where their friendship was delved. Then there was Running on Empty, about a lonely teenager trapped in his family's off-grid lifestyle in the Mosquito Coast. He played the son of a man determined to build a utopia in Central America. And in Stand By Me, his character resented being defined by his family's reputation. Back in the 1980s, it was known that Phoenix had an eccentric childhood, but in retrospect, and this is the reason I'm reading this article, because this goes back to my main points. In retrospect, it feels as if few appreciated just how extraordinary it was. His parents, John and Arlen, were traveling countercultural hippies, and when River was only three, the family joined the Children of God, a Christian cult that believed, among other things, that sex without boundaries was a form of love. Yikes! That's not very Christian. Okay. Rose McGowan was also raised in that cult. And she has her issues as well. The family moved from Venezuela to Mexico to Puerto Rico to spread the word of the call, and Phoenix was sent as a child to busk to raise money for food. He was also, he later said in an interview, sexually abused when he was 4 years old. So Phoenix was sexually abused at four, and he remembers it. God. Phoenix almost never discusses the Children of God, but his mother quoted him as saying, they're disgusting. They're ruining people's lives. And this was a cult that his parents were in, with the alcoholic father who probably was a pedophile. Now, did he do things to his own children? Who knows? That they're not talking about? Who knows? But, you know, they were within that cult where sex was love. You know, that right there is a big red flag not to be in a cult with your children. Wow. The family was so entrenched in a cult that John was designated his father, the Archbishop of Venezuela. But eventually they left it and moved back to U.S. Phoenix never went to school. Instead, his mother contacted the casting director at Paramount, and Phoenix began working at the age of eight. So here are parents who used and abused their children to make money. So he's being used and abused to make money. This is why I tell people never, ever, ever put your kids in modeling, in acting, in anything until after they're 18 and they can make the decision. But then they can't take advantage of the money that the kid makes, can they? Because by that time, they're legally an adult and they can't take the money. So these are parents who abuse their children. I'm sorry. You know, most of the parents who are putting their kids, you know, I don't know. You got to think twice before you put them in an industry like that. And boy, you better be there at every moment to take care of them. Phoenix began working at the age of eight. His siblings, Rain, Joaquin, Liberty, and Summer soon followed suit. We kind of miss having a normal childhood, sometimes missing our friends, but we go someplace, we get to meet other people, but then you have to say goodbye to them, the 13-year-old Joaquin told a journalist in 1987 when a TV crew visited the family home in Florida. I think the opportunities in film are just amazing, and things they've gotten to do and got confidence. I think they're pretty much normal children, said his mother, smiled his mother. The family was loving and close, but John was complicated, father. In photos of him from 1980s, he is splitting image of Joaquin, and River reportedly saw him as a little brother rather than a paternal figure. So River felt like the adult because he was the one making the money and supporting the family. John had problems with alcohol, and from an extremely young age, Phoenix felt as if he was, not his father, had to support his family. There you go. River said to me in the last years, I just have to make one more movie to put away enough money so my youngest sister can go to college. Mathis recalls, I don't know if that was true, but I remember him saying it. Mathis is talking to me on the phone from her apartment in New York. So much has been written about Phoenix over the years, but Mathis, who was with him when he died, has never spoken about him in depth before. Except to my therapist, she says, with a rueful laugh, partly this has been out of respect to others who loved him, and partly because she was traumatized by his death. She blocked it, a lot of the memories, but she recently saw for the first time since Phoenix died, The Thing Called Love. That was the movie they were in together, in which they co-starred, and his last completed film. And it got her thinking about things she hadn't thought about in decades. So when she got a message from me soon afterwards saying, I want to talk to her, it felt, she says, like the universe wanted me to talk about him. We met when we were both 19, and he bummed a cigarette off me in LA club. This sounds incredibly cheesy, but I knew I would be with him one day. It just felt fated between us, and there was such chemistry. 3 years after the first encounter, Mathis' premonition came true when they were cast in The Thing Called Love. I think we recognized something in each other. Mathis had been raised by a single mother and had been acting since she was a teen. We came from a very different family, but perhaps there were some broken parts in each other we recognized. We found safe harbor. Or maybe they recognized that their parents used them to make money. After Phoenix died, various people who knew him talked about how they had seen the famously clean living actor slipping into drug abuse over the years. Mathis, however, remembers his final years as very simple and happy, recalling the times they stayed with his family in Florida and Costa Rica, where they played music and cooked vegetarian music. We just hung out with his siblings and got to be kids. She says, crying again, he was so good at hanging out. Now, you know, she was in the movie with him, and that was the movie I was saying where he was so obviously high. And so obviously deep into drugs. So she started a relationship with a severely screwed up drug addict. So how, you know, if she didn't see that, how is she going to see that he was doing it at all? All right. Perhaps in the absence of father figure, Phoenix filled his life with quasi big brothers like Dermot Mulroney, Dan Aykroyd, and Phoenix and Mathis stayed with them, the latter for a time in the Canada. Aykroyd had lost his best friend, John Belushi, to a drug overdose just over a decade earlier, and he reportedly urged Phoenix to stay away from drugs. Michael Stipe was another. We met through sister, says Stipe. She moved to Florida and became familiar with the whole family. I would visit her and hang out with them, and I have two sisters and I love very much, but River was like my little brother. We're exactly 10 years apart and really did feel like a brother to me. Phoenix's mother had moved the children to Florida as they became more successful to keep them out of the seedier elements of the LA life, but Phoenix still saw it as his role to save people. And as he started hanging out with various people in Hollywood and LA, he tried to help them come off heroin, going so far as to get one particular individual into rehab, but when he needed help, they didn't help him. That's what Mathis said. In fact, in some cases, it was the opposite. She says Phoenix was, as far as she knows, sober during their time together. Well, she was wrong. He was not sober. It was obvious in that movie that he was not sober. But I was very young then in the days before he died, though I knew something was going on. According to 2013 book Running with the Munsters by Phoenix's friend Bob Force, Phoenix had spent the previous days on a massive drug binge with the Red Hot Chili Peppers guitarist John Frusciante. River stayed with John for the next few days and probably didn't get a minute of sleep. The drug routine stayed pretty consistent for all of that. First, they smoked crack or they would shoot coke into their veins for that 90 seconds electric brain bell jangle. Then they'd shoot heroin to get a grip and come down enough to be able to carry on a conversation for a few minutes before you start to cycle again for a stroke. On the night of the 30th, 1993, when Mathis realized Phoenix wanted to stay at the Viper Room, she went to the bathroom. I knew he was high that night, but the heroin that killed him didn't happen until he was in the Viper Room. I have my suspicions about what was going on, but I didn't see anything. When Mathis came out of the bathroom, she saw that she thought was Phoenix in a scuffle with another man, two of them being pushed out of the club side door by a bouncer. When she went out to the street after them, she saw Phoenix drop to the ground and go into convulsions on the pavement. Thankfully, this was before the paparazzi was, ubiquitous, so there were no photos, but it also meant no one was around to help. "What have you done? What are you on?" Mathis shouted at the other man. "Leave him alone. You're spoiling his high," this guy retorted. God. It's in convulsions on the ground. Mathis desperately tried to get back into the club through the side door, which was shut. So she ran around to the main door and she found Phoenix's siblings. Joaquin called 911 and a phone call that would almost immediately be leaked to the news. "He's having seizures. Get over there, please, please. He's dying. Please," sobbed the 19-year-old. Phoenix had already flatlined by the time the paramedics arrived and was pronounced dead at the hospital. He had died from an overdose of cocaine and heroin. After he died, everyone had a theory about how the beautiful boy with such a great aspirations gone wrong. Today, Mathis remembers him as sensitive and obsessive. He felt things in his heart very deeply. Plimpton said, after he died, and this was his ex-girlfriend, she said, "He was just a boy, a very good-hearted boy who was very fucked up and had no idea how to implement his good intentions." Phoenix was younger than James Dean when he died, and his death was at least as seminal for his generation. Before he died, he looked like even more of a sure success than Tom Cruise, and his absence made space for other actors such as DiCaprio, most obviously. Leo told me he saw River the night he died before he went to the Viper Room, and that might have been a warning because Leo never got... This is what Rob Reiner said, ever got into drugs. DiCaprio ended up playing at two lead roles that were intended for Phoenix, taking the lead in The Basketball Diaries and Total Eclipse. So those were two lead roles that Phoenix, because he died, never got. But the reason Phoenix is still revered today is not because of his absence, but because he still feels so present. He was such a natural actor with his work remains amazingly inundated. And while being a missionary actor might be costly personal, to a very large degree, he succeeded in his mission. But let's see, let's go down here. Basically, this is talking about how, he was compared to Kurt Cobain, how he lived out the ends of his days. I'm looking at a photo of him now. "Oh, wow," Mathis said, briefly trailing off. "I think if River was still here, I think he'd be acting, directing, saving the environment, just living and hanging out. Oh, gosh, wouldn't that be nice?" But, again, I think she didn't really see him for who he was. But this is what happened with River Phoenix, who was friends with Johnny Depp, who was friends with Keanu Reeves, Leonardo DiCaprio. I mean, and Keanu and Depp were apparently also with Mathis when they walked outside. So they were there. And so Depp has always been involved in this deep drug lifestyle. And I think people need to remember that. And that the fear I have is that this is what's going to happen to him at a later age. But he'll just be like Prince and all the others who have have yes people around him, and nobody's going to stop him. And then we're going to hear that he's dead. So that was just a kind of a point that I was trying to make. This has been Amorist Eclectic. Till the next podcast.